Len Zeem, you're on the move again. You're traveling north, and we'll have to talk a little bit about travel. But up here, the golf courses are busy in Illinois. Of course, some of them are cleaning up from Monday's storm, and hopefully nobody had any serious damage, but we have seen some pictures of some downed trees at golf courses around the Chicago area.
I think it's just fantastic how golf has taken off in the middle of this pandemic, because we're in the middle of a trip right now, and we've been to Georgia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. And, of course, we know what it's like in Florida. But all our stops on this trip, the courses have been very busy. They've had to squeeze us in at odd hours. I mean, it's not like you just come in and pick your tee time. You know, we had a 3 o'clock at one place and a 2:45. We're happy to play and happy to get out there to do our thing. But golf is doing really quite well as far as participation goes, as far as play goes. There seems to be a mixed report as to how well it's doing on TV without spectators in the stands and everything. But I've watched them. I think the broadcasts, they've been, for the most part, pretty good. I'm happy to see them. But the play, that's the story right now. I think pretty much nationwide, people are finding golf as a place to escape from the other problems besetting the world, and that's a good thing.
Well, rounds seem to be up everywhere. The courses that lost a lot of money, especially here in Illinois in April and May, have made up a lot of that money, if not almost all of it, with how busy they've been in the last 2 full months and the first 10, 11 days here in August. And it's almost getting to a point you wonder what condition some of the golf courses are going to be in a few weeks, because, you know, the old saying about looks like an army marched through, and I'm sure a lot of our more popular golf courses around town, that's how they look like about now.
This last storm, I can't fathom how that must have been. But if your course is, look at it this way, if a course is looking kind of beat up and so forth, it's probably from heavy play. Heavy play is not a bad thing. I mean, I feel like the courses everywhere are kind of, from what I read and from what I've seen and from what I've heard, they've bounced back from a tough economic time in the spring to at least getting back to even or better just a few months later. So I hope it continues for them all.
Yesterday, Len, I played some golf up at Pine Meadow and Mundelein, and I really have to give head golf professional Dennis Johnson and his staff a real strong pat on the back, because they did a wonderful job yesterday with a pretty close to full tee sheet of getting everybody out, keeping the range going, having things picked up right away. 4 trees were down in the first fairway. I had an 8:40 tee time. 3 of them were cleaned up by the time that I got there. I got the full report from Catherine Jemsek, the president of Jemsek Golf, that oversees and operates Pine Meadow for the Catholic Archdiocese. But Pine Meadow was in pretty good shape considering the storm that blew through there. The thing that they were struggling with there was the fact that they still had no power. All the blinds were up on the windows, the doors were open, and they had to go with a couple of small portable fluorescent lights in the bathroom so people could actually see in the restrooms. But other than that, the operation was going pretty strong. Not much they could do with food, but they were trying to keep beverages as cold as they could. I think Dennis Johnson himself had gone out and bought some bags of ice, and they were putting drinks in coolers full of ice to keep them cold for golfers that were coming in off the golf course looking for something to drink.
Well, Dennis has always been, he's a real veteran on that job, and he's been a resilient guy. He's been real nimble. Even when the period before play really was beginning, he turned his driving range into a short course for kids. He's looked for new ways to make things work. He was, of course, a leader in getting the PGA Junior League started in the Chicago area and nationwide. I'm not surprised that Dennis had Pine Meadow operating again, and there are plenty of good club pros in the area, but this is a time where they really get their professional skills tested.
Today I went out and golfed over at the Preserve at Oak Meadows, and it was nice to see the large crane hard at work at the new clubhouse lifting steel. I was there in May, and they were starting to raise steel for the first floor, and today they actually started raising steel to build the second story. So things are moving along. And I know that the hope was when they broke ground last September that maybe in just about 30 days from now, they'd be ready to move into the clubhouse. But between COVID and other issues, I got to believe, looking at where they're at right now, they will not be in the clubhouse this month. They will not be in there in September and October. And I got to believe it's going to be maybe right in front of Thanksgiving before they can start to move in and use that brand new facility. I talked to the head pro, Jamie Nieto, today in his office in the old pro shop building, and he's brought in a lot of different things, has the place pretty well decorated, and I was telling him how great some of the stuff was that he had up there, different pictures, golf photos, different things, and he said, well, it won't be my office much longer. He says, as soon as the new clubhouse opens, I'll be getting moved over there. So I know he's looking forward to it, and I'm sure the golf operation will be great for DuPage Golf once that new clubhouse gets built at the Preserve at Oak Meadows.
Tell you, I sure hope our good friend Ed Stevenson is feeling good enough to enjoy what all this good news coming on from out there, because he's seen that that facility through some real tough times, and it's going to be, the course is good now, and when the clubhouse was certainly needed and missing for a long time, but you know, more power to Ed and the people over there that to get that facility up to the level it's at. It's a real nice feel good story about golf in Chicago, and I'm hoping I'm around when they complete the project with the opening of the clubhouse, because if you take all the years put in from the time when that course was having all its flooding issues, an awful lot of things had to be done over there, and to think how far it's come, I mean, that's really a good feeling and speaks very well for that whole staff.
Len, I think that DuPage Golf is not done with improvements. I had a recent conversation with Ed Stevenson, the executive director of DuPage Golf and DuPage County Forest Preserve District, and also architect Greg Martin, who did the renovation work at the Preserve at Oak Meadows. And I've got a feeling that once the clubhouse is done and opened, that they're going to take a look and start planning on what they can do across the street at Maple Meadows. Now, obviously, the work that would get done over there would not be at the level that it was at Oak Meadows. We're not talking about a millions and millions of dollar project, but there could be some green and tee work and some bunker work done over at Maple Meadows and tune that place up just a little bit. And the Preserve at Oak Meadows, you know, and in talking to Greg Martin, he was out there not long ago this summer and is looking at how people play the golf course and the different things that could be done. And I sense that he's got some tweaks he'd like to make to the golf course now that they can see how people are playing it, look at the wear and tear patterns. There might be a few trees that could come out that, you know, slow down play in certain areas, or take some of the intended design out of play just because of how big the trees are and, you know, how big some of the branches get. So it'll be interesting to see how DuPage Golf goes forward over the next couple of years, especially after the clubhouse opens. And I suspect from what I saw today that it's at least over 3 months out.
Well, you know, Maple Meadows has been a fun place to play. I mean, it's a lot different than Oak Meadows. But it's nice to have that complement of the two courses right together. You know, it's good that they're not forgetting about the other golf course there. I mean, it's understandable. I think Oak Meadows is going to be a very high profile course once that clubhouse gets built. But the other course, there's plenty of for lots of courses like Maple Meadows within not just the Chicago area, but anywhere. It's just a fun course to play that a lot of people can take on, and giving it a little more attention, a little tender loving care would be a good idea.
The big story today comes out of the state of Georgia and Augusta, Georgia, mm-hmm. home of the Masters Tournament, and they have formally announced there will be no patrons at the tournament this year and no guests either. So it will be an interesting Masters when they tee it up come November.
That is a real stunner. I really didn't expect that to happen. My guess is as time went on, first it was going to be, well, I don't know how serious they were about the John Deere Classic, but they definitely had announced that there would be fans at the Memorial, then backed off maybe a couple of weeks ahead of it. my guess then was that it'd be the U.S. Open that would break the bubble and let spectators in. And then that went by the wayside. PGA was always never going to really plan to have them at Harding Park, I don't think. But the Masters, you know, in November, that's really a stunner. The Ryder Cup isn't the same without the spectators. Masters might still won't be impacted quite as much. The beauty of the course will be even more in evidence without spectators around it. Just, I'm sure the drama will be every bit as tense as it usually is. But I'm very surprised that the people at Augusta National didn't take the step of going out there and being a leader and bringing spectators back into the PGA Tour. You know, over the years, they've been a bellwether, a trendsetter in tournament golf, and I thought this would be just another instance of that.
PGA Tour has not really made an announcement regarding fans for after the playoffs are over, and there was some thought that maybe limited fans would come out to some of these fall series events, but if the Masters is still not doing fans in November, I can't see the PGA Tour bringing fans in come late September and October to some of these tournaments, even though some of them seem to be located in places that would not be high COVID-19 areas. And you would think that if they said, hey, we're going to bring 500 people a day in, that they could have done that. But that may not be the case.
I'm not really being facetious, but just throwing it out there. It opens the door for the LPGA to take a real leadership role here. They have their last tournaments of the season, their majors, in fact, are in early December. So that's still another month after that. I mean, the schedule is so jumbled up that we're getting tournaments of note. And you know, the LPGA, this is, you know, their big tournament in Naples. They've had two tournaments back-to-back in December. Maybe that's their chance to say, look, we're bringing them back to our tournaments, and that'll set the tone for what'll be, I'm sure, a much, much nicer, much more normal 2021 for all of us.
The announcement came out this morning, and I think a lot of people, at least connected to the John Deere Classic, have to be very excited. But one of their board members, Zach Johnson, all-around good guy, does a lot of charity-related things through his foundation, named the winner of the Payne Stewart Award presented by the Georgia Company, and I think they have picked an excellent selection for this year's winner.
Zach's a great guy, and he's a player who's on the has long been involved with the John Deere Classic, and not just in a nominal way. He's been on the board. He's involved in. Claire Peterson tells me he's at least on the phone or in contact at every one of their board meetings. Of course, he's a past champion. We know that. He can really play, still really play. The John Deere Classic is really lucky to have Zach because he's a perfect liaison between the tournament and the tour players out there.
Len, it'll be interesting to see how coverage shakes out at the U.S. Open going from Fox back to NBC. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a column earlier this week of what I thought the pros and cons were regarding the coverage from the PGA Championship. And the first thing I noticed was you log on to the PGA of America's website to get a scoreboard leadership on Thursday and Friday. There's no mention of where the cut might be. There's no mention of how many players and ties will make the cut. There's no designation for who the club pros were in the field. And it was really hard to follow. And the new website actually looks nicer than the old website, but pertinent information, especially on Thursday and Friday, was lacking. I also thought that the late start times on the West Coast that do cause problems, and they've done so in the past. And you would have hoped that CBS would have learned from NBC at Pebble Beach, and especially that it's really not fair when you go at late start times. And first off, the leaders are on the first tee about dinner time on the East Coast and in the Midwest, and then they're practically finishing in the dark out there. And the other problem is they penalize the leaders by doing so because they may start the first six holes in shirt sleeves, but more often than not, the temperature goes down 10 to 15 degrees over the last 12 holes. Guys have to go from shirt sleeves to long sleeves to all-weather outfits. And basically, the worse standing you have in the tournament, the better conditions you get to play in. Not to mention, on some of those courses that have been out there on the West Coast, when you start having trees, especially on those closing holes, it's not fair for some of the players to have to putt through the shadows and the shade that they have to do later in the day. However, I thought CBS rebounded well on Sunday. Incredible coverage, just the way they moved it around. You got six named players in the hunt tied for the lead, and they just went from hole to hole, 17, back to 12. Now we're going to 13, this guy, that guy. And it's what golf coverage should be. And I thought they did an excellent job with the coverage, even though the start times weren't very good. And then there's ESPN, tried to do some extra coverage on Thursday and Friday, tried to do it by charging people $5 to watch certain parts of the day. I know it's not a lot of money, but right now, with a lot of people looking for something to do, maybe still out of work, trying to pay certain bills or been out of work for a long time, maybe they've just gone back, charging people to watch a golf tournament on Thursday and Friday, a major, I just thought wasn't a great idea. And then, of course, you go to SportsCenter, a late one on Sunday night because of the delay in the rain here from the White Sox and Indians game. And you go in, and all they're talking about is the fact that Tiger was finally under par on Sunday, and even though he finished in whatever it was, 39th place or something like that, all they're doing is talking about him. And he wasn't really ever a factor in the tournament. And maybe one, you know, maybe by now, here we are several days later, maybe they've figured out that Colin Morikawa actually won the tournament.
Well, you know, this thing with the Tiger story and stuff has been a long pet peeve of mine, that he gets TV focus even when he's not playing well. It just has always seemed to me so unfair to the other players and inappropriate for TV coverage. The thing that I agree with you, first of all, I agree with you completely about how good that coverage was Sunday from Harding Park. That was a boom, boom, boom. And the coverage fit the drama of the tournament. It was really well done. But the earlier days, you know, I couldn't help but feel with the weather changing and all that, that this was our year for this was the adequate substitute for the absence of the British Open. The weather was changing, that the players who went off late, you know, they had it tougher than the ones who went out early, and it was it seemed without a British Open, this was the next best thing for if you want to watch the changing weather of golf affecting a tournament. It was it had a new dimension to it. So anyway, now the U.S. Open is the next thing, and I really think the TV changes there will benefit that tournament. I didn't like the original switch anyway, and now we're back to somewhat of a normalcy, and I think things will be fine.
Well, let the fog roll in San Francisco. If you can't get it over on the Scottish-Irish coastline, let it roll in on the San Francisco Bay over there and come into the golf course. And, you know, I was at Harding Park about 20 years ago, and it looked like a really beat-to-heck dump, let's put it that way. The clubhouse was nothing special. The putting green didn't have a lot of grass on it. Neither did the first tee. And it looked like an old rundown city golf course that had had nothing done to it in years. And kudos to whoever came up with the money, whoever came in and oversaw the renovation. I think Harding Park looked really good on TV. And it's great that the people of San Francisco have a fantastic city golf course now to go and play. And of course, the fact that it's held a major adds a lot to it. People who visit the city will want to go there and play, much as they do Bethpage Park, State Park in the New York, Long Island area. Now that that's hosted a PGA, two recent U.S. Opens. Of course, the Ryder Cup was supposed to be there in 24. I guess it'll be there in 25 now. It's great to see what was done at Harding Park. And Len Zeem, I know that come October, you're going to have some company at Port St. Lucie, Florida. Seven Illinois PGA section pros will be advancing to the national senior PGA section, led by Mike Small, who ended up winning it here at the Merritt Club yesterday.
That was good to see him come back and win. He's not finding much in the way of tournaments to do right now. And I'm sure he's more worried about how he's going to handle his recruitment and the reorganization of the collegiate schedule. Mike's still a player. He is still a player. And I think we'll see that again in the Illinois PTA Championship coming up at Medina number one later this month. I mean, this is a tournament Mike has won 12 times. You don't see a tournament dominated by any player, any tournament at any level that often. But Mike has also been dominated senior play too, and he's got a fifth Illinois Open in him, because that would be significant. He had tied Gary Pins for the most wins in that tournament, but that's getting harder and harder for Mike to win, I think. But he's certainly a factor in the senior events, and he's certainly he could challenge in the national if the event at Port St. Lucie too. I wouldn't rule him out, and I'll be there to cheer him on.
Len, news came from Jerry Rich over at Rich Harvest Farms this morning. More disappointment there. They were supposed to host the Big Ten Men's Conference Championship in May. That was wiped out due to the pandemic. And unfortunately, now the MAC Conference has eliminated all fall sports this year. So the Northern Illinois Collegiate Invitational, Rich Harvest Farms Invitational, that was scheduled for the last weekend of September, has also been canceled. So the next time we're going to see some great college-level players playing at Rich Harvest Farms will be the Palmer Cup, named for Arnold Palmer, next June.
Jerry's had some tough luck there, and it's a loss for the players. I got to address the college scene, I think. I was very surprised these latest announcements that I could understand the reasons behind the decisions to call off football in a lot of conferences. I expect the SEC, out where we live in Florida, I expect them to still be playing. But I was puzzled as to why it was carrying on to golf. I mean, here we've got all this recreational play everywhere going on, and they're calling off a golf season in the fall for college kids. That would not seem to me to be impacted as much, if at all, by the pandemic, simply because of what I've seen and heard about public play all around a lot of the country. So that was a real shocker for me, because I could understand changes in schedule. I could understand just interconference play or play within state. It's big schedule changes. I thought that's what would happen at Illinois, that they would, Mike would have to do a major rescheduling and both of his tournament at Olympia Fields. Maybe they'd go to some dual meets instead of the big tournaments every weekend. But I still haven't followed the logic behind that.
Final thought for this week. The last 2 days, I've been out on the golf course breaking in new clubs. And you and I have talked from time to time about going out, getting new equipment, getting fitted. Get it done right. Go on out and improve your game. And I think I learned the last couple of days, in spite of the fact I've got some great new Callaway Maverick equipment, and the driver has jumped in very well. The wedges seem to be working well, the Roger Cleveland design Jaws wedges, but still need a little time to get in and get settled with the Maverick irons. They play a little different than the previous set that I had. And, you know, the one thing I guess we should mention to people that, you know, even if you do go out and you get fitted and you spend a lot of money and you get new equipment, and there is an adjustment period. And it's not just for the amateurs like you and I. Even tour pros need a little time to settle in with clubs. Not so much the clubs. They will tell you. I remember talking to Ernie Els about this, and he said more often than not, when pros make an equipment change, he goes, that's not real difficult. He goes, what is difficult is when you change the golf ball you're playing. So I have also tested some golf balls here the last couple days. A brand called RZN that's being made, I believe, in Korea. But they are the company that made Nike golf balls when Nike was still doing golf equipment. And now that Nike is not making golf balls, they're not making clubs, RZN improved their technology. They have gone out on their own and are now making golf balls. So they won't be RZN balls with a swoosh painted over them. They will just say RZN. But there's four different types of golf balls, and I'm sort of trying them out a little bit too. But I guess getting back to my original point, for people who've gone out and got golf clubs this year, John Claffey, the VP of Marketing at Tour Edge, said they've seen a real surge in club sales. Give them a chance to get settled in. Give yourself a chance to settle in with your clubs, and don't expect an overnight miracle.
Tour Edge and Wilson are real trendsetters in the golf equipment side. Our local people there. You know, you're more the tech guy than I am on this stuff, but I remember I had a real change of heart. I was very skeptical in the early days of club fitting. I didn't think that the ones that I had, I didn't think I had very good guys doing the fitting, but I have found just a great guy here in Florida, and he's made a believer out of me completely. I got to go find him, I guess, because my game has been a little on the inconsistent side lately, and this isn't a good time for that because I've got a lot of golf coming up in both Ohio and Michigan in the next 2 weeks. So time will tell how that goes, but it's going to be fun no matter what.
Len, look forward to talking to you next week for Volume 23.